Today on the Grave Talks, Haunted State, Wisconsin. Is Wisconsin the most haunted state? Many paranormal investigators who comb through countless cases of paranormal happenings believe so. Michael Brown is one of those investigators and a filmmaker. His journey has led him to document some of the most iconic and extraordinary haunted activity throughout the state of Wisconsin. From a haunted schoolhouse attachment that left the classroom with him after an investigation to a haunted radio station where voices of children can be heard late at night. Side note, it's one I used to work at. Michael's stories of ghostly phenomena in Wisconsin run deep. Today on The Grave Talks, Haunted State, Wisconsin.
It started in radio for me. I did a morning show back in 2005, and we did a paranormal investigation at a place called the Octagon House. It's in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And I always had aspirations to be a filmmaker. So that's really what I am, is I'm a filmmaker. I'm not really a paranormal investigator. Obviously, by doing this, as long as I have, my first film was in 2014. There's two films in the Haunted State series. They're both streaming on Amazon. One is called Haunted State, Whispers from History Past. And the second is called Haunted State, Theater of Shadows. And as I got through the second film, I realized I really wanted to bring this genre, if you will, the paranormal genre, if you want to call it that, to a docuseries style. I just haven't seen anything like it. And I just thought it'd be really cool because some of the shows, and I'm not going to name them, but some of the really popular cable shows, I just feel like they're so entertaining, but they're really over the top. So I wanted to kind of, you know, bring it back to actually one of my favorite TV shows is The Americans. And one of the things the producers of that show always talk about is, and kind of give a background, they're CIA agents and FBI agents in the past. So they're writing the show and they're basically like, hey, some of the stuff you see on TV on this topic is not real. So they always tease like their show was more boring. Like, for example, if they'd be firing a gun at a car, the car wouldn't blow up because in reality that wouldn't happen. I kind of wanted to take that same concept to the paranormal genre is, you know, let's be honest, for the people who do paranormal investigations, sometimes it's just really boring and it's a lot of work. And I just wanted to kind of bring that full circle and let people see as one, you know, they say Wisconsin has the most haunted state, and whether or not that's true or not, that's to be determined. But that's where the title Haunted State comes from, because we're just covering Wisconsin for now. And it's a docuseries, so it's not just about the paranormal, it's not just about the evidence, it's about the personal stories of the four individuals and the locations and the history, and we just kind of ball it all up, and it's really grown up from day one, and it all came from that one day in 2005 with me and my friend Todd Deering, who's a cast member, doing a live broadcast on Halloween from the Octagon House in Fond du Lac.
And this story, I should note to the audience, I mean, this is very personal to me, too, because Todd Deering is one of my good friends. He's one of the people who this show wouldn't exist if it weren't for Todd, because he's the one who started me in radio and taught me basically everything I know when I was a teenager. And we worked, you and me both ended up working at the same station at different points in time. And that building, that area, the Octagon House, roughly a half mile from that very radio station. That whole area, lots of ghostly activity, lots of ghost stories, lots of activity that people have of the area. And I what I'd love to do first is kind of jump in to talk about the Octagon House a bit. Let's talk about that radio station a little bit. I'll share some of my background of what my ghost stories are from that radio station in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, from the years that I worked there, from about 96 to roughly 2000, 2001-ish. I had issues with the phones constantly, where the phones would light up in the evening hours when no one would be there, would show solid lines as if people were on them and no one was there. I had heard what was our news director at the time, or thought it was our news director, Greg, walking down the hall on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. I was the only one in the building, heard his keys, heard his papers. There's a distinct sound that Greg makes. And I said, hey, went down to say hi in the newsroom. There's no one in the building.
And you're talking about the world famous Greg Stensland.
Yes,
aren't
I
you?
Am. Yes.
Yes, I am.
And,
well, good man.
And there, those were some of my personal experiences. I always had a fascination of going down to the basement of that building and taking a look at the what's left of the bricked off tunnel, of the Underground
Railroad. And I have a story in there, actually.
I want to hear it. I want to hear it. And there was others that had shared stories from my time there. We had a night guy named Michael who... he had seen what he thought was one of the program directors at the time walking by a studio door in the evening, went out to say hi, walking again down a dead end hall, and no one was in the building. Others have heard keyboards typing, and I know that the list goes on and on from hearing children playing and many other things. Those are just a fraction of some of the things from my chapter of life at that building. I want to hear yours.
Yeah, I had quite a few too. Now, I had not been into the paranormal at all until I worked there. My son was born in 2005. I chose to move to Fond du Lac because of it. And just the way things kind of worked out at the time, that's where I ended up. I had actually come from WKTI in Milwaukee, which for people who know radio, no offense to Fond du Lac, it's a really big step down. But I wanted to stay in radio and I did it. And I'm so glad I did because I have so many good friends, you know, from that time. And, you know, but going downstairs was the very first thing people told me about, because I don't know if you know the layout of the building, but that office that was way in the corner. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? That just one random office that was there. It almost had like the open window.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
It's a newer office. It was all just once an open space in that part of the building.
Correct. And that's where they threw me. So I'm right by the stairs, which is terrifying because you hear all these stories right out of the gate. Like, oh yeah, this place is haunted. And I'm thinking, well, I've always been a skeptical believer. So finally, one day I go down there. And this is once I started kind of doing paranormal investigation after that story I had told previously. And I walked downstairs and I heard a woman's voice say, hello. And I was down there all by myself. It was a disembodied voice. And that was when I didn't know what to think. I just, you just kind of freeze when something like that happens. And you know, especially when you don't have a lot of experience with actually dealing with the paranormal, hearing about it and dealing with it are two completely different things. And having that one experience was crazy. And there was one time too, where, if you remember, in the Sunny studio, Sunny 97.7 studio, WFDL, we were in there and all of a sudden everything went off. The rest of the building, the power was on. The way the grids are set up, they're shared grids. So if the power is out in one area, it should be out in the other area. And Todd and I just kind of looked at each other and, I want to say something like someone asked, I have to get this right. It's a little foggy, but someone had pounded on the table and said, do you know that you're dead? And then the power went off. And then we just were like, whoa. And then it went back on. And the thing is, I hadn't really known Todd Deering quite that well, and just his reaction to the paranormal and his passion for the paranormal really helped me, because he's just such a good guy. Mm-hmm. And he's a role model, which is funny. He's probably hearing this laughing right now, hearing me calling him a role model, but he is. And so hearing that, you know, he took this seriously, I knew that maybe I should too. And that's when, you know, all the other stories where people would see full body apparitions in the building and lights would go on, footsteps, and that creepy bathroom at the end of the hallway. I'd be in there alone at night and I'd hear someone walking down the hall. I mean, I'm already in the bathroom, so it works out well for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's definitely, definitely haunted. There's definitely paranormal activity there. And, you know, maybe it's a place that we film for season two. Who knows?
Yeah, there's just always been so many things that have gone on there. And it's interesting because the stories in that building, from everything I've heard from many people, probably a friend of ours who had lived upstairs, Jake, for quite some time, he had stories. And the thing is, the stories seem to never... I can't pinpoint it down. I can't pinpoint it to it's this person or that person. There seems to be a lot of people in that haunted radio station, from children to people.
It used to be a hotel.
Okay.
And that's the backstory, is it used to be a hotel, a very popular hotel in Fond du Lac, and hotels are synonymously haunted for whatever reason. So.
Sure. So it was a hotel, because I attempted to do some research on this pre-Google. This was, I literally walked down to the library one day after being spooked out at the building, and I just started doing research. I think I was in high school. It's probably like 17, 18 years old. And I just started trying to dig up buildings on the history of Fond du Lac, the city where the hotel, or where the radio station is. Trying to find any information. So I'd found information about it being a saloon. I believe I remember hearing rough things about it being a hotel. Right. I believe, I mean, the building itself dates back almost to like the turn of the century, correct? What is the history of that building that you were able to uncover? Because you probably were able to dig deeper than I was when I did my research.
Right. Well, what happened was two buildings were combined. So the hotel and what did you say it was earlier? Did you say it was like a speakeasy? Is that what you just said?
Yes, that's what I found out.
Right. So those were combined. It's actually two separate buildings that were combined. So the basement is attached to, I'm trying to think, I believe what would have been the speakeasy. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know if you remember when you would walk down the hallway, it would be kind of uneven. When you'd walk from the office to the studio, it would be kind of uneven. And that's why, is because it was two buildings that were connected.
Yeah, there's a separation of the building with a door, too, between the two stations. Yeah,
right. And that was it. And that's the best I can recollect. It's been quite a while since I've delved deep into the history. But that's pretty much what I can remember. And the funny thing about that place is, that place turns skeptics into believers. I mean, like you had mentioned Jake earlier, you know, he's a very skeptical person, but obviously, like anyone out there listening, once you have these experiences, you're instantly a believer. And, you know, and that's one thing I want to quick talk about with my producer. She did not believe, her name is Angela Olson. She's amazing. And she did not believe in any of this stuff. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring her in, because it's kind of a Mulder Scully situation where I'm the Mulder, and she's really trying to keep it honest. And now, you know, going through the second film, all through the series, she's had all of these experiences, and she still is going, there has to be a plausible explanation for these things that have happened. And that's kind of how it is in the building in Fond du Lac, is, I mean, people still believe it's happening, but they're like, there has to be an explanation for it. And that's really where the show comes in, is because we're not trying to prove it's real. We're not trying to prove it's not real. Essentially, we're investigative journalists, filmmakers, and we're just saying, here's what we got. You decide.
Yeah, and that's what I love about it, is, and that's how our show approaches things too, both of the shows, is we've already established that we believe this stuff. We're not here to debunk. We're here to more so learn the story of what is going on, or who is behind what the living are experiencing. In that building, we'll take it back to the tunnels, which were part of the Underground Railroad, which has always been very interesting to me around that town. Those tunnels led throughout the downtown. It led through towards the high school. When I was in high school, I remember they were doing some renovations in the part of downtown, and they came across several tunnels they didn't even know existed. Parts of the downtown street started sagging in, and they discovered, oh my God, there's these tunnels here we were unaware of. Part of it goes through what was the old high school football field. They lead all over the place. And those tunnels also lead to the Octagon House, which is where you had spent that night, where a lot of things kind of began for you in terms of investigating the paranormal. And from what I take, a life-changing experience in terms of investigating on the topic. Take me to the Octagon House. I have never set foot in there after all those years. Walked by it every day while going to high school, because I'd park right next to it. Tell me the story of the Octagon House, and tell our audience the story of the Octagon House. Yeah. And then
it's an amazing building. It's up for sale right now, actually, if anyone wants to buy it. First of all, get that out there. It is on the National Register of Historical Places. And the story is, I believe it was the third mayor of Fond du Lac at the time built this Octagon House. And at the time, downtown did not exist. It was just a wide open field. And it is now where downtown Fond du Lac is. Located, but in this house, he has hidden rooms to protect slaves, because he was a big member of the Underground Railroad, and he was a safe haven for slaves to make their way up through the north, and then he would hide them. So when, you know, the cavalry would come looking for their slaves, they would search his house and they wouldn't be able to find him. Those rooms that are hidden are still there. And there's one room in particular where it's a built-in drawer and like an armoire built into the wall. And when you pull the dresser drawer, the whole thing opens. It's amazing. And then you have to get down on all fours and crawl through a little bit of a tunnel. It's very, you know, we'll say 7-8 feet. And then you're in a very small room, like maybe the size of a closet. So to call it a room is a little bit of a stretch, but there's enough room to maybe for like a 5-foot tall person to stand up, but you're kind of hunched over if you're taller than that. You can maybe fit 4 or 5 people in there. And one of the interesting things in that room is the slaves or whoever was being hidden in there wrote messages on the walls. So when you go in this room, you see all these messages on the walls of who was there, and it's just so amazing. And I don't know how much of it has stood the test of time. I don't know how much of it is from what time period they're from, but there are definitely messages on the wall. And going through that building into the basement, there is a tunnel that leads out to a shed, which is another hiding place. At that time, the shed was not there. It was just an underground bunker. And that was another place where slaves were hidden. So it was a very unique place at the time. And it's shaped like an octagon. So when you look at the house, you can't really tell that there is hidden rooms, where obviously if you have a square house, you can be like, okay, look at the outside of the house and say, okay, what's in that room? So it kind of throws you off a little bit. And the one thing I want to say about the house on a personal level is I'm creeped out by dolls and I'm creeped out by clowns, and it has a little bit of both. when you walk in there, there's a bunch of porcelain dolls and all types of dolls, and It gave me an uneasy feeling, but it has nothing to do with the house. It's just my phobia of dolls, because they creep me out, you know.
Is it Marlene who still owns the property?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I know her family's trying to sell it. I know they're having to keep up with the taxes on it, and I know that they definitely are looking for a buyer. And yeah, if you're into the paranormal, I know that is a place you're definitely going to want to scoop up and buy. I mean, I have countless stories there. I've actually filmed twice there. The first time I didn't really know what I was doing at the very beginning of all of this. And then the second time our footage actually got corrupted on a hard drive. So we've never been able to air any of that footage, which really is disappointing, because we got some amazing footage. It was right after, not to get political, but it was right after Barack Obama won in 2008. And obviously with there being slaves there and our first African-American president, mm-hmm. we started talking about that. And the reactions we were getting from the SB7 device was truly amazing. I'm sure I have audio on that of that somewhere, because I was able to keep that. But it's just such an amazing place, such amazing stories. Pretty much every room has its own story, and there's activity throughout the whole house. Lots of EMF as well pumping through that house too, which for those of you who know, the EMF will help feed the paranormal entities, in theory, if you will. Mm-hmm. So
It is such an interesting place, and I understand the doll thing. I remember as a child, I grew up near where the owner, the previous owner, or whatever she is currently or was, Marlene, had another place called Marlene's in town, and it was a costume shop. And I would walk by that, and very eccentric woman who had a taste for it very much. It was kind of like a vaudeville show going on.
Absolutely.
With her decor. Which, you know, for some they love it. For some, it can be a little unsettling and a little bit creepy. But very interesting nonetheless. And I think if folks are interested in seeing the inside of it, I believe American Pickers actually picked the Octagon House, or Marlene's, one of the two, several years ago. You can probably find it on Netflix. But very interesting place, obviously, and just one of many. In the state of Wisconsin, that to me was one of my childhood ones that I knew I'd walk by and go, ooh, spooky. But as years go by, the stories just continue to grow out of that place. With haunted tourism, and that being such a thing now, it's not an ad for real estate, but that would be a great place for someone who is looking to rent out places for investigations.
Absolutely.
That would be a hotbed. Let's talk more about, let's go beyond the block down there of 210 South Maine and Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Let's expand a bit more throughout the state. And it's something that I had heard for quite some time growing up, and I don't know if it's just a thing because it's what you hear with where you are is what you said earlier. Wisconsin being one of the most haunted states in the country. You say this to folks who are not from Wisconsin, and they look at you and they tilt their head and go, huh? Wisconsin? But to Wisconsinites who are into it, it's almost like a fact of life. We just believe this. But if you look at a lot of the stories, as you have, and a lot of the evidence, there really is per, I don't know if it's like per square mile or what the measurement system is that I've heard. It's pretty heavy. Chad Lewis, I believe, also told me that same thing many years ago. Of the per square mile or something of that nature, of it being one of the most reported active states in the country. What to you, once you started getting into this after having the experience at the Octagon House and thinking, hey, I want to do more investigating, what were some of the next places that stood out to you that you wanted to dig into deeper and tell their story?
Yeah, I just read everything I could, and some of it was by Chad Lewis, actually. And you know, I just wanted to figure out what places have the folklore, what places have the high volumes of stories. And I really wanted to tell the folklore stories and then go in there at first and see, you know, is this folklore? Is this real? What's going on? And, you know, right out of the gate, the very first place we filmed at is a place called, and this actually is in the first film, Whispers from History Past. It is, at the time it was called, the Stone Cellar. It is now called the Stone Arch in Appleton, Wisconsin, and it dates back to 1857, and it's always been a brew pub. It's always brewed beer, and man, what we got there is absolutely amazing. I can say it was my first real paranormal experience, and we get a lot of flack from the comments, and I'm sure you know, kind of go out there and read things like people say about your show, and you get the feedback, and it's a really polarizing thing to do the flashlight experiment, which for those of you who don't know what the flashlight experiment is, it's when you have a Maglite flashlight and you kind of turn it to right before it goes on and you put it down on a table and you ask yes or no questions. And when the spirit will want to say yes, if they can't audibly speak with you, they'll turn the flashlight on and they'll do it off on command. Some people buy this, some people get really upset about it, and it's really kind of a polarizing thing where either you love it or you hate it. And this was the first time I ever had that happen with the flashlight at the Stone Cellar. And man, the voices we got and the communication we got, there was one server there named Caitlin who was in the film, and she would always have this activity around her. There's this one area, this like private bar in the back where they would have they would rent it out for parties and stuff. She'd always be back there and like a Saturday night or something, and stuff would always happen. Stuff would fly off the shelves. She'd feel people touching her, and she's in the room alone. So we took her kind of as a trigger object, if you will, and brought her in there. And what we got, what we captured on film, is truly amazing. It's in the first film. You can see it back in my I didn't know what I was doing film days. And man, it was the first time we had a spirit or entity say an uncouth word as well. It got a little jealous towards her because there was a male spirit there that was seemed to be kind of flirting with her, and she got called a choice name, which I'm not going to say on the air here, but it I mean, it's crystal clear. You can hear it in the film, and that place is now called Stone Arch, and people still talk about it. They have it printed in their menus that they're haunted, and it's because it definitely is. And you just get the feeling too, because the basement has like the old stone from the, you know, the mid 1800s down there, and they've kept it intact. You know, they've restored it, but everything is pretty much originally as it was back in those days. And it's definitely worth the trip if you enjoy beer and you want to get a good scare. It's definitely a good place to go visit.
And it's interesting where some folks will say, well, it's static electricity, whatever their argument may be for the flashlight. You have to admit, or anyone has to admit, you know, there's something very bizarre going on when you ask a question and you get a response, you know, with the light as you asked, with the timing being correct. That's just very right. bizarre. I mean, there's something there. Sure, I guess you could make the argument of it being static, but you have to admit there's something that had happened there. I do remember seeing that clip. I don't remember if it was you or Todd. Somebody posted it on social media at the time. I think that's what made me interested to go, I have to start watching what you're doing. This looks interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I mean, I have so much to say. We could have a whole show about my thoughts on the flashlight experiment.
Sure.
I mean, when I read people's comments, this is the really, really difficult part about covering a show on this topic, is because people already have their opinions formed in some cases. So mm-hmm. then you're bringing something to them where they're just not going to believe it, you know. But we had a situation in the pilot episode of the docuseries Haunted State on Amazon Prime when we did countdowns. And I don't know if you saw that, but we did countdowns and we used different numbers every time. And we had it happen 3 times in a row where these flashlights would go on. I mean, and we would literally be like, okay, when we count to 3, turn it on, boom, and go on. Okay, the next time we'd say, okay, when we count to 6, turn it on. And that happened, and happened one other time after that. So for me, when it's going on and off on command, that's the key, on command.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. Now, there are, you know, scientific theories on how the flashlight is going on, and you can unscrew it and it can go on and off, absolutely, but when it's going on and off on command, mm-hmm. that's the part where I'm going, man, I don't know how you can really argue that.
Yeah, it's there's something there. I mean, you can't argue that it's happening. It is happening. Why it's happening, how it's happening, I think that's where skeptics come in. My tip on the uber negative or the uber critical, I have come to love the ban button and the delete.
See, on Amazon Prime, I can't do that.
That's true. On that,
can't. We went from a 4.6 mm-hmm. for our score to a 3.4, 3.5. And the people who are, I mean, it kind of makes me laugh a little bit because
sure.
I get so much feedback and our ratings are amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're pushing millions and millions of minutes a month. I mean, we're doing very well. But the thing I've learned is that when people are upset about something, they're going to complain. Whereas when they're happy, they're not going to go out yep. of their way to say, hey, I'm really happy about this. So I'm happy with the quality of the show. And I enjoy the reviews either way, but it is what it is, really.
Sure.
It's kind of.
You can't please everyone. You just got to keep going and just, you know, do it because you love doing it. And that's what matters.
Exactly.
I mean, that obviously a very interesting location there in Appleton, Wisconsin. There are numerous haunted locations all over the state, and that's what I'd like to continue to cover on today's episode. Let's move into some of the other locations. I want to get into the theaters in a moment because I know that was the follow-up documentary. But on the first documentary that you had put out, what were some of the other locations that you had investigated that really stood out to you that just made you really go, oh my God, we're really kind of discovering some stuff here firsthand that is beyond what even I expected to get?
Yeah, absolutely. We went to the First Ward Schoolhouse in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, which is no longer available to investigate because someone purchased it. It's a home now, and the city has banned people from going in there. So that place, I'm going to circle back to that place in a second because there's a really dark story that comes with that place. But I want to answer your question here fully. Then we went to a feed mill that one of my friend's mother owned, and she'd kind of told me about it. And we just kind of were going there for fun. We didn't think it was going to make the film. And the evidence we got there is pretty amazing. We got a person to identify their name, and we can prove that they were tied to that location. It was the previous owner. On the spirit communication device, we were able to pick up the first and last name, which is pretty amazing. And then finally, we went to the, what do you want to call this? The pinnacle location from the first film, the old former Pabst Brewery in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Now, I had gone there for a tour because I love Milwaukee. I'm a huge advocate for it. I'm from Milwaukee. I love Milwaukee. And I want to put Milwaukee in as many of my films and TV shows as I can because it's a beautiful city. And the old relics of the we'll call it the Pabst neighborhood. I mean, it was the largest brewery in the world for 30 years. And then I think it was 7 square blocks. It was ginormous. And then they moved to San Antonio in 1996. And people in Wisconsin were not happy about it. Lots of jobs were lost. And then the area just crumbled. So for 18 years, the building sat there, you know, with rats and you name it, just rotting away. And then a gentleman named Jim Hurdle came in and bought the former Pabst Brewery administration building. And he only paid $50,000 for it. And now that whole area, if you know, it's right by the Pfizer Forum. The area is back to life. It's doing very well. And so, I mean, I'm glad I was able to kind of get in on that location before all of the rehabilitation happened, because when I went in there for the tour, I just got this weird, creepy feeling. And this is where I started to learn that I'm Dave Schrader from Darkness Radio and from Ghost Adventures had kind of told me that I'm what's called a poltergeist agent. And that essentially is someone who draws in the energy. So when they go in there to film, they're always kind of targeting me. They're always saying my name. So throughout that first film, that was kind of a problem for me, is I kept having my name said, and at Pabst, it really came full circle because we actually captured what we're calling a shadow person on film, saying my name, came behind me, freaked me out. And then I had horrible dreams for 3 years. And then that kind of, goes into the second film. But the Pabst Brewery is now open. You can tour it. It is 100% amazing. I have such a good relationship with the people that own it. They're such nice people, and the area is amazing. And I can't say enough good about it, but it's still definitely haunted. I would rank that. I've probably filmed at, we'll say, 50 places. That's in my top three.
Do you think that places like that was, you know, it was a place of employment. It was a place of you know, great passion for many people who worked there for so many years. It wasn't just a job. You know, it was a career. It was the source of income for families for several generations in that part of the state of Wisconsin. So when you have a place like that you dedicate essentially a good portion of your life to working at, and then when one passes away, those seem to be the type of places that you have a lot of hauntings, where those who worked there, who loved their job and loved what they did, they return to it. Is it because of the passion? Is it because of the love for what they did that they want to continue being there?
I do. I think it's energy. You know, we use the word haunted, we use the word ghosts, but I really believe it's energy. And I believe through learning and talking to Lloyd Auerbach, a parapsychologist who actually is on our show, he talked about psychokinesis, how we actually have this ability. And, you know, 6 months ago, if you told me I'd be saying that sentence, I would laugh at you. But the more and more I go down the rabbit hole on this, I'm believing it's kind of true. If you know the scene in Ghost, the famous movie with Patrick Swayze, mm-hmm. where he, you know, he dies and he's trying to warn his loved one that she's in danger, he tries to knock things over. And when he tries to knock things over, his hand goes through it and he can't do it because he doesn't really have a body anymore. You see the body in the film, obviously, but there's nothing there. He's invisible. And psychokinesis essentially is moving things with your mind, communicating with your mind, similar to Eleven on Stranger Things. And I know some people are probably laughing at me right now, but essentially that is how these spirits are communicating with us, is they do not have bodies. You know, they're feeding off of energy. They're doing these things with their mind. And there's a study that was actually done with EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, in the 1970s, where these gentlemen, and I don't know where they were from. I believe they were from Harvard. They went in and did some EVPs, and they had a sealed cassette tape. Back in the day when you had to go to the store and buy, you know, a cassette tape to record music off the radio, they had a sealed cassette tape, and they were getting EVPs on their devices. And they were able to get EVP on the sealed cassette tape when they took it off, which proves it's not actually audible. It's actually an energy. So to kind of circle back, I just believe it is energy. And that's my theory on how, and theory is not really the right word to use, but I'm going to use it anyway, on how all of this is working. And I do think emotion is a huge part of that. So when you have a place that you love, have a place where you have happy memories, because yeah, you think about it. I mean, not only was it a job, but they probably made friends there. People probably met their spouses there. And it was not no small location. I mean, they had, you know, a dentist office there. You name it. Everything was there. They had childcare there. They had everything that you need was right there at that job. And there was only one really bad incident. I think it was in 1919. There was an explosion. And it happened at 4 a.m. So had it happened in the boiler room, had it happened at a different time, there would have been more fatalities. So, and that's another thing people will say to me is they'll say, oh, someone died here. And honestly, there's, in my opinion, that's nothing to do with it at all. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with it. I just think it really comes down to energy and passion and, you know, where do you want to be? And that's something we've all talked about as a cast is where would you go? And I mean, I have the places I would name. And I think for the people that are at Pabst, that's one of those places for them that they're really happy.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Michael Brown about Haunted State, Wisconsin. In part two of our interview, we'll continue our discussion and ask what terrifying event happened to Michael at a First Ward schoolhouse and what dark entity came to follow him home. Can residual hauntings also be inhabited by conscious entities? Are haunted workplaces truly haunted by conscious entities, or is it the energy of those who expelled it repeating itself? Wisconsin is filled with haunted theaters. What are some of the most haunted, and who haunts them? How many ghosts haunt the Grand Theater in Oshkosh, Wisconsin? What is done at investigation sites to try and keep negative attachments away? And are there specific devices used to communicate and detect spirits that are more reliable than others? We'll ask those questions and more in part two of our interview. To hear it, become a supporter of our program, a gravekeeper as we call them. Just go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. For $5 a month, you'll have access to part two of this interview and all of our interviews going back more than a year, including access to advanced episodes of our program, released to you as a gravekeeper months before they are released publicly. Check it out, patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.